Okay, we're going to get started. So welcome to Extended Data Center Networking with Partner Solutions. My name is Bob Combs. I'm a program manager in the Windows networking team at Microsoft. We call our platform a Cloud OS platform because the platform has been specifically laid out and designed to satisfy broad migration of business applications, whether that be from private clouds or service centers, hosters. There's a rich set of features that have been put into the platform to satisfy a lot of these stringent requirements that data centers have. And we learned a lot of this from our end customers, as well as internally our own data center applications. Things like Windows Azure, Xbox, Bing, etc. Microsoft has some rather large data center operations. The design of the system is actually hybrid on purpose, so that it can do both on-prem as well as public cloud. And applications, business applications, can be moved from one to the other seamlessly with the same management experience. There's a focus on how people interact with this, both from the user level, from the developer level, and from the various levels of administrators. Now let me talk about a couple of technologies in particular which help set this stuff up. First off, the thing that you want to do with data centers is you want to establish your network fabric and have that network fabric not dependent on workload configuration. You want all of that workload configuration to actually move to the host edge. And that specifically means using the Hyper-V virtual switch as that policy edge. So we've put an awful lot of rich policies into the Hyper-V switch itself. And we've made it extensible, so you can have capture, filtering, forwarding, extensions. That's part of what we're going to focus on here today. The other thing that I wanted to tell you about another technology that's rather significant is when you've got a data center operation, or even if it's just a private cloud, you're going to have different tenants, and you want those tenants to be isolated from one another, and you want a scalable isolation mechanism. And the mechanism that we put into Windows is Hyper-V Network Virtualization, or HNV, as you'll hear us call it quite often. Essentially, what it does is it creates virtual subnets and lets you put multiple of those on at the same time. And those subnets then show up as isolated and secure from one another. Where all this takes you is that you end up with a network without boundaries. That is, I can now move from on-premise to public, I can stretch across those two, and I can do all of these things because I've got things like the Hyper-V extensible switch and HNV technologies. And as this depicts here, you'll see that there's a blue network and a green network, and there's elements of it that are in service cloud and public cloud, and with gateways off to legacy systems. The clouds aren't to scale, obviously. And the other key thing is that we made the whole solution extensible. I mentioned before that the Hyper-V switch is extensible. But the other part of it is that SCVMM is also extensible. So our partners can go ahead and plug in to not only the switch, but also to SCVMM so that you can get a unified management experience even with a third-party add-ons and enhancements built into the system. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. So probably for about the last several releases, we've been working closely with several different partners, key partners who have some really great products that we're going to talk about here. We're not going to just talk about the product. We're actually going to drill into how do you take that product and actually configure it for your data center. So I'm going to let them do most of that talking. In particular, I'm going to have Five9 talk about their cloud security for Hyper-V. NEC is going to talk about their programmable flow virtual switch for PF1000. And Cisco is going to talk about the Nexus 1000V for Hyper-V. Now, these are all great guys. I've worked with them for a while. We're going to start off with Konstantin Malkov from Five9. Before I came to Microsoft, I was a New Jerseyan, so Konstantin's a fellow Jerseyan. Welcome.
Hello, everybody. I'm Konstantin Malkov, CTO of Five9 Software. And as Bob mentioned, we developed an application called Five9 Cloud Security for Hyper-V. Basically, this application solves a couple problems. First of all, it is a security application, and you know that these days amount of different malware, spyware, viruses, and all kinds of hack attacks grows exponentially, if not faster. So enterprises, public sector, and SMB need tools to protect against these attacks. Especially it is important in the cloud where you have virtual machines and virtual private servers that need to be separated and traffic needs to be controlled in a multi-tenant environment. So in case one virtual machine is infected for some reason, you know, the others are protected. Plus, of course, security needs to be managed on a per VM basis. So we developed an application that has three components. And as Bob mentioned, we actually utilized Hyper-V extensible switch. You could see here in Hyper-V Manager that there is a Five9 virtual firewall extension. It's a filtering extension. Elegancy of Hyper-V switch allowed us to develop agentless solution for both virtual firewall, intrusion detection system, and antivirus. So it was the first solution that was truly agentless. Early versions of Five9 Cloud Security for Hyper-V required installation of the agent inside the guest operating system, inside the virtual machine, but not starting version 3 when Windows Server 2012 and Microsoft Hyper-V Server 2012 appeared. I'm going to show today briefly features that allow you to set the rules for virtual machines or for groups of virtual machines, which is very important. And by the way, we just released version 4.1, which has a full multi-tenancy support for both domain workgroups and mixed environments. So it has been released, and many hosting providers, public sector, and enterprises are deploying this application with Windows Server or Hyper-V Server. So, application exists in two flavors. There is a standalone application, which I showed. It's a management console where you could you see the host system, you see tenants. You could create global rules or local rules for virtual machines. You could create different tenants and users. So. And of course, it allows you to view the logs, virtual firewall logs or intrusion detection logs for virtual machines. So what I'm going to do here is this is actually quite a simple example here. You could see that there's a virtual machine. This is CentOS virtual machine. It's loaded here in a Hyper-V Manager console. And there is a client machine, which is called Windows Client right here. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to load I'm going to try to access web page on that CentOS web server here. You see that there's a allowing rule, this CentOS virtual machine belongs to a virtual machine group called web servers. And you see that web servers virtual group has HTTP allowing rule. You could create other rules, like for example, if I would want to create a rule that would allow also ICMP traffic to that virtual machine, or to or in, and I would say that I would allow ICMP traffic either bidirectional or one, you could select inbound or outbound, you could specify local ports, you could remote ports, you could specify that you allow this traffic between specific virtual machines, a part of your virtual environment, and we also have templates that allow you to implement and create rules for common scenarios, such as, for example, FTP server, HTTP server, and so on. And this management console, this is, as I mentioned, this is one type of GUI. Another type of GUI is we have the virtual machine manager plugin. So all of the functionality that you have available, including the virtual machine security groups in standalone console, you could also implement and access in a virtual machine manager plugin. So what I'm going to show here briefly is as I mentioned, there is this web servers virtual machine group. And as you see, there is a TCP/IP traffic allowed on port 80. So, you know, this web page is displayable, and you could see that I can go here and I can refresh the page, and it is accessible. Now, if I want to take this machine and remove it from this security group, then when I attempt to access this page, let me go here and do a refresh. Something is timing out, I guess. Let's see here. Did I do the right thing? Yes, something is wrong with the adapter, I guess. Let me play the video that shows how this actually works.
Cloud security for Hyper-V is the agentless security and compliance solution built specifically for Microsoft Hyper-V. Five9 Cloud Security consists of three main components: management service, which acts as a management server; management console for Five9 Cloud Security centralized management; and host management service, which is installed on each Hyper-V host intended for protection. This makes Five9 Cloud Security easy to install and maintain by administrators of any level. Let's have a brief look at the way it works on the Hyper-V level. So if you go to Virtual Switch Manager on the Hyper-V Management Console, you can see the 5.9 Virtual Firewall extension integrated into the Virtual Switch. The current version is version 4, and this is the one which allows 5.9 Cloud Security to completely control traffic inside the virtual network. So let's have a look at the management console, and as you can see, the virtual machines were not monitored with our firewall protection. So therefore, at this stage, they can access each other with no problems at all. So these are two virtual machines. One of them is Windows client, and the second one is CentOS, a virtual machine with Apache web server installed. So while virtual machines are not being monitored, you can see that a Windows client can easily access the CentOS VM through the web interface, as it is a web server, and it can also ping the virtual machine. So ping requests go through and they work. So let's have a brief look at the rules enabled. So right now for all VMs, there is a setup which has ISMP traffic allowed and RP traffic allowed on the network. So we enable monitoring on Windows client and CentOS VMs, and you can immediately see what happens throughout this way. I just remind you that ISMP traffic is allowed, RP traffic is allowed, but there is no allow rule for the virtual machine to receive the HTTP traffic. This means you can completely isolate virtual machines from each other, and they'll be entitled only to the traffic you allow them to use and to communicate with each other. So right now, let's have a brief look at the web service group, which has HTTP rule allowed and ISMP traffic blocked. So we'll add the CentOS virtual machine to the web service security group, and it should immediately use the rules assigned in that web service security group. So right now you see that HTTP allow and ISMP block are effective for the CentOS virtual machine. So let's go back to our test system. So you see that Windows client can easily access the web server now, but ping requests immediately stopped working. So I remind you that we just allowed the HTTP traffic to the CentOS virtual machine by adding it to the web server security group, and we blocked the ISMP traffic. Security groups allow to conveniently set up firewall rules for multiple virtual machines playing the same role, and also allow to conveniently set up a group of virtual servers. So what we are looking at right now, we are looking at the Windows client 2014 virtual machine, and that virtual machine doesn't have the HTTP rule allowed. So we are going to create a web client's security group, and this group will include the HTTP outbound allow rule, and we'll assign that rule to a group of virtual machines which play the client's role. So as you see, we are adding the Windows client and Windows client 2014 to web clients group, and the Windows client already had HTTP allowed rule, but on the virtual machine level, and right now we are adding the both of these virtual machines to web client security group, so therefore both of them received the HTTP outbound allow rule. As you see, we refresh the page on Windows client 2014 virtual machine, and it can easily see the web server on the CentOS virtual machine. What we are going to do next, we are going to set up the specific requirement for web service security group to allow its communication only with the security group of web clients. So the web service security group right now is allowed to receive the HTTP traffic for web client security group members only. As you remember, Windows client virtual machine has the HTTP rule allowed on the virtual machine level, but right now we just removed it from the security group, which was called WAP clients. Right now, Windows Client 2014, which is still a member of this WAP client security group, can still access the WAP server, but when we start to refresh the page on Windows Client virtual machine, which was just removed from WAP clients security group, you see the page becomes unaccessible. So page cannot be displayed. Let's add it back to security group to demonstrate that this is the actual reason. So we add it back to WAP clients, press OK. You go back to the virtual machine, and here where the magic happens. So the virtual machine can see the WAP server again. Everything is done in a few convenient steps, and this allows you to do the management scenarios very fast. Right now, let's have a look at the intrusion detection system capabilities. To do that, we'll run a...
actually, that was the same host system and virtual machine that I was going to show it to you live, but something is wrong with the adapter, I guess. I will mention briefly that we do have intrusion detection system. It's using the same callout kernel mode driver and filtering extension. So basically, what it does, it analyzes the packets and matches it against the snort signatures. So you could see here that IDS system displays the log. There was an attack, application level attack to virtual machine that in this case is web server. And of course you could filter log, it's stored in the database, and you could then correspondingly set the blocking rule that would allow, that would completely block traffic from the source. And the third component is a agentless antivirus system. It's a unique technology that basically allows to perform agentless antivirus scans without installing agent inside the virtual machine. And it's a module that works in conjunction with the change block tracking driver. So when the scan happens, incremental full scan, it's extremely fast because only change sectors are checked. So anyway, thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, I'm ready to answer now or after the session. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the other thing I should say is that I've been kind of happy that over the last several releases to be able to work with some really bright engineers from these various companies. So one of these bright engineers is Peter Lee from NEC, who's going to tell us a little bit about Programmable Flow Virtual Switch PF1000. Peter and I are from the same area, that is Redmond, so both of us are quite happy to come to Houston and visit summer. Peter?
It's us. So thanks, Bob, for the introduction. So I know most people may not be familiar with Programmable Flow. So before we start our demo today, I want to give a brief introduction to Programmable Flow. So Programmable Flow is a networking solution built on top of OpenFlow. In Programmable Flow, users define virtual networks called VTNs, which sits on top of any underlying OpenFlow physical network. Configuration in Programmable Flow is done against the VTNs on the PFC, short for Programmable Flow Controller, instead of on the network switches themselves. Any changes in configuration are then pushed out by the PFC to the network switches, which could be either physical or virtual. PF1000 is NEC's virtual switch extension, which enables Programmable Flow in Hyper-V environments. So here is a slide of our demo environment. So today I will walk you through how you can use VMM to work with PF1000. In addition, I will also show HMV running in programmable flow. So as you see in our slide today, here, we have two Hyper-V hosts with VMs already created, but not connected to any networks. There are multiple paths between the two Hyper-V hosts through the two physical switches. We also have the PF6800, which is the PFC that we will be using for our demo today. And then lastly, we have a VMM 2012 R2 server managing this environment. So as I mentioned previously, in programmable flow, users define VTNs to work against. So for this demo, I have already created a VTN for the HMV traffic. So this VTN will use VNAM 200. And during the demo, we will also create another VTN, which will not use HMV. That VTN will use VNAM 100. So here's an overview of the steps that we'll be doing in our demo today. We'll do most of these steps through the VMM console. So first, we'll add a network service for the PF1000. And we'll configure this network service to work with HMD. Next, we'll create a logical switch, which we'll then use to create the virtual switches on the Hyper-V host. Next, we'll create the VM networks for our VTNs. We will then connect the VMs to the VM networks and verify connectivity. And lastly, we will set path policy on the VTNs so that we can separate the HMV traffic and the non-HMV traffic on the physical host. So here we are in our VMM environment console. And as you can see right now, there's no network services and no logical networks defined. When you install the PF1000 vSIM provider, which is the software you need to use for VMM to talk with PF1000, you will see it listed in Settings, Configuration Manager, as listed right here. On this VMM server, I have also defined a couple of run as account. The PFC user account contains the credentials for the PFC's web API. So the PF1000 vSIM provider will use this credential to configure the VTNs on the PFC. And then there's also an account defined for the VMM administrator. So let's start our demo as we walk through how you can use VMM to work with PF1000. So let's go back to Fabric, and we will add a network service for PF1000. So add network service. For a name, we'll just call this PFO, short for programmable flow, and next. We'll select the NEC PF1000, next. For the run as account, we will select the PFC user. The connection string contains the settings for the PFC that you want to use. So there's two information that we need to provide. The first information is the URI for the web API. So for our demo, this will be PF6800:ED80. The second information is the IP address that the virtual switches will use to communicate with the PFC. And for our demo, we're going to use 192.168.1.141. And click Next. Let's test to make sure we're entering the correct information. If you see any errors here, that means either the credentials or the connection string that you provided is incorrect. So click Next. We'll select All Hosts, Next, and then Finish. So when the PFO network service is added, it will create two new logical networks, as you can see here in the logical networks. So if you want to use HMV, you need to select the programmable_HMV logical network. If you do not want to use HMV, you will select this other logical network. Before HMV will work in programmable flow, we need to configure the HMV logical network to let it know which VTN to use. So let's go into, we'll right-click on the HMV logical network and select Properties. And then we'll select Network Site. So for, as I mentioned before, for a demo, I have already created VTN for the HMV traffic. So that VTN uses VNAM 200. So for a VNAM, we'll enter 200. The IP subnet is a subnet for the provider addresses. You can enter any value you want, but for our demo, we'll just use 192.168.10.0. Okay, so the next step we need to do is we need to create an IP pool for the HMV logical network. This way, VMM could provision the PA addresses. So we'll right-click on the HMV logical network and select create IP pool. Since this will be used for a provider pool, we'll just call it provider pool. PA pool, that is. Click next. We'll click next again. So for our demo, we're not going to change the address range or add any gateway, DNS, or WINs, but you can change these settings if you need to. So I'll just click next all the way through. So in the programmable architecture, max spoofing is required. So our next step that we need to do is we need to create a port profile which allows max spoofing. So we'll right-click on port profiles and create Hyper-V port profile. For the name, I'll just call it the PFOL VMM profile. And make sure it's a virtual network adapter port profile. Click Next. Now, the only thing that we're going to do for our demo is to enable, to allow max spoofing. But you could, enable other settings if you need to. So I'll just select allow max spoofing. Next, next, and finish. Okay. So our next step that we need to do is we need to create a logical switch. So we'll right-click on logical switches and create logical switch. We will call this a PFOL logical switch. And we'll do next. And then we need to make sure to select the PFOL virtual switch extension. Next. Because for our demo, we're using multipathing, the uplink mode that we need to select is team. And then we also need to add an uplink port profile, which is basically the PFOL uplink port profile that's exposed by the PFOL network service that we added. Next. We'll add a virtual port. And for the classification, for the demo, we'll select high bandwidth, but you could use a different classification if you need to. We also need to select the PFOL virtual port profile and also include the P4 VMM profile that we just created, which allows max spoofing. We'll set this as a default, and next, and finish. Okay, so with the logical switch created, next we'll go into our Hyper-V host and create our virtual switches. So we'll go into VMSense services, we'll right-click on Hyper-V1, select properties, virtual switches, do a new logical switch. Make sure it's connected to the PFOL logical switch that we just created. Since we're using multipathing, we'll add another adapter. And then we'll select the adapters that we're going to be using, which is the Ethernet 3 and 4. I'll press OK. Now we'll do the same thing on Hyper-V2 to create our virtual switches. New logical switch, make sure it's connected to the PFOL logical switch. We'll add an adapter and then select the Ethernet 3 and 4. Okay, so the next step that we need to do is we need to do some more additional configuration on these virtual switches. So this step may not be needed in your environment, but for our demo today, we need to do this. So to do that, we need to go to the Hyper-V host. And here, I already have a remote PowerShell session to Hyper-V1. So we could run the get PFV switch command to see a list of the virtual switches that are enabled for PF1000. So as you can see here, the PFOL logical switch that we just created is listed. So when PF1000 is enabled for a virtual switch, it will create a unique ID for that virtual switch. And that ID is listed under the data path ID. Now this ID is unique within the network, because later on for our demo, I want to use a different ID for this virtual switch. I need to switch, change its ID. To do that, I will call the set PFV switch command. And here I am changing ID to all ones since this is running Hyper-V1. We'll run the get PFV switch command again to verify that the ID was changed. Now the next thing I need to configure for the virtual switch is that I need to enable the VMM DHCP extension. So this way, the VMM will provision the CA address correctly. So to do that, I will get the VMM DHCP extension from the virtual switch and then enable the extension. Okay, now we'll do the same thing on Hyper-V2. We'll get our virtual switches. We'll change the IDs all to, since it's running on Hyper-V2. Let's verify the ID was changed, and then we will enable the VMM DHCP extension. Okay. So right now our virtual switches are created. Our next step is to create our VM networks for our VTM. But before we create our VM networks, I want to briefly explain the model for the VTM on VMM. So the model is actually quite simple. A VM network will map to a VTN unless the VM network uses HMV. So for VM networks which uses the HMV, they will all share a single VTN. So for our demo, we will create two VM networks, one which supports HMV and one which does not support HMV. The first VM network that we'll create is, we'll call it the Boo VM network. So this VM network will not support HMV, but we will have VMM provision the VTN. Before VMM could provision the VTN, we first need to register a VNAM for the Blue VM network. To do that, we will go to a PowerShell session on the VMM server and use the register-pfo.vsim7vnam command. So here I am registering VNAM 100 for the Blue wildcard VM subnets on Blue VM network on PSC PF6800. So the VNAM should be registered now. So we'll go back to VMM, and we will create our VM network. So we'll right-click on VM network, create VM network. We'll call this. Test. We'll call this the Blue VM network. Because this VM network does not support HMV, we need to select the non-HMV logical network. Click Next. We'll click Next again for isolation options, user-defined, Next. We'll add VM subnet, and we'll call this boo_subnet. For a subnet, we'll use 10.1.0.0, and we'll do Next, Next, and Finish. Okay, so that's, we'll wait. Okay, so that's all we're going to do for a Blue VM network. We will not create an IP pool because, well, let's just assume that VM which uses this VM network uses static IP. So next we'll create another VM network which uses HMV. So right click, create VM network. We'll call this the Red VM network. And we'll make sure the HMV logical network is selected. We'll do next. We'll isolate using HMV, next. We'll add VM subnet. I'll call this red_subnet. And then for the subnet, we'll use the exact same one that we use for the Blue. Do next, next, and finish. Okay. Okay, the next step that we need to do is we need to create an IP pool for the VM network. So this way, VMM can assign the CA addresses. So we'll right-click and create IP pool. I'll call this the red_pool. For our demo, we are not going to change the address range or add any gateway DNS or WINs, but you could change these settings if you need to. So I'll just click Next all the way through. Okay, the VM networks are now created. Now we'll connect our VMs to the VM networks. So first we'll connect up the Blue VMs to the Blue VM network. So I'll right-click on Blue one, select Properties, Hardware Configuration, Network Adapter one. We'll connect to a VM network, make sure it's Blue, and we'll press OK. I'll do the same thing on Ubuntu. Hardware configuration, network adapter, connect to VM network, make sure it's blue. Okay, we'll wait for the VMs to be connected. Okay, now we'll go into blue one. And I'll run ipconfig to get its known address, so it's 10.1.0.2. Now we'll go to Ubuntu and we'll ping 10.1.0.2. So as you can see, the ping was successful. Now let's do the same thing on the red VMs. And we'll connect it to the red VM network. Right-click properties, hardware configuration, network adapter one, connect to VM network, select the red VM network, press OK, and I'll do the same thing on red two. Properties, hardware configuration, network adapter one, connect to VM network, and connect it to the red VM network. So we'll wait for the VMs to be connected. Okay, now we'll go into red one. So if you see Windows detected in the network, this means the IP address was assigned correctly. So we'll run ipconfig on red one to get its IP address. So it's 10.1.0.2. We'll go back to red 2 and we'll ping 10.1.0.2. So as we see here, the ping was successful. So here I am running the PLC console application. So with this application, you can see the network topology and also the flows on the network. So as we see here, we have the two physical switches here, and then here there are two virtual switches, and they're all connected to each other. Here, we can see the flows in the network, so I'll hit refresh. So here are the flows for the blue VMs. So I could tell this is from the blue VMs by looking at the VTN. And then here are the flows for the red VM. So as we can see here, right now the flows for the VMs are all going through the bottom network switch. The last step that we're going to do in our demo today is that we will set some path policies on the VTNs so we can move all the HMV traffic to the top switch and then keep the non-HMV traffic on the bottom switch. So setting the path policy on the VTN is a feature provided by the PFC. So we need to go to the PFC. So here I have a remote session to the PFC. So I will run the script to set the path policies. Okay, so we'll go back to our PFC console application and hit refresh. So here is the flows for the HMV traffic. So as you can see, it's going through the top switch. Here are the flows from the non-HMV traffic, and it's on the bottom switch. So as you can see here from our demo today, most of the steps that you need to take in VMM are the same steps that you normally would take. The key things to remember are to select the right logical networks to use, to configure the HMV logical network if you plan to use HMV, to remember to select PF1000 if you plan to for your logical switch when you create it, and lastly, to configure or to register the VNAM if you want VMM to provision the VTN. So if you have questions or would like more information about PF1000, you can visit the NEC booth in the TechEd Expo. Thanks.
Alrighty, that was great. Okay, on to the next. Last but not least, another bright engineer from Cisco this time, Sujeet Kaul. Thank you.
Hello.
Turn on, are you live?
Hello.
Give it a second.
Test, oh, good. Hi everybody, my name is Sujeet Kaul. I'm a lead software engineer in
Cisco, and I work on Nexus 1000V group. So today we'll go over Nexus 1000V, and initially we'll go over how to get it up and running in your setup. It's already available and shipping product. So let's go over it. So just to, before we start the demo, let's get to some insight into what exactly is Nexus 1000V and what exactly it does. So Nexus 1000V is one of the virtual switching solution product from Cisco. And what it does, it brings up the existing Nexus OS, which is a part of physical switches, to virtual world. So what users can do is, as you can see on the physical switch, you have supervisor modules and actual line cards which are doing the data path traffic. So what Nexus 1000V does is, we have virtualized the supervisor modules, so you can run it as VM on Hyper-V environment, or you can run it as a VM on our physical appliances, which we sell to, which can be managed by network admin. And what we do is we extend our line cards to your hypervisor. And when we extend our line card, we replace the, or we install our Nexus 1000V as a forwarding extension, so it does the, all the forwarding decision for you on every hypervisor. As you can see here, all the VSM or virtual supervisor modules can be managed by network admin, where they will configure all the policies and the networks along with the physical hardware, so they know what is happening in the virtual world as well as physical world. So before we jump into demo, a couple of concepts which you will configure on SCVMM. So basically, to get the VM working, you have two components. One is a network and one is a policy. And users or network admins who are familiar with our physical switches configure most of the things from our CLI. And as you can see on the CLI, now to get a VM running, we configure network. As you can see here, it's shown as network segment database one, where you'll user will configure mode of the network and the VLAN and different policies. So what we are showing here is you can use the same network and make a combination with the different policies. So one can be acting as a client and one as a server, and you need to apply different your security or ACL policies. So to jump into the installation, it's a multi-step process. We have shown it step by step to make your life easier. And so that way, you, when you go back from here, you can download the product and install it in your data center for get it working as soon as possible. So as you can see here, we'll go through every step. So one is just nothing but downloading the packet. Second step is getting your SCVMM up and running. So for SCVMM, to integrate with our virtual supervisor module, we ship a Nexus 1000V provider, which integrates with SCVMM and communicates with our virtual supervisor module. So as you can see here, we provide all the template files and MSI to install on SCVMM, and also the VSM ISO. If you're running a VSM as a Hyper-V VM, then you will install it from SCVMM. That's why it's running as an optional component here. Or you can directly install it on the Nexus 1110 as a physical appliance, where you can run multiple network services. And as you can see again here, if you're not installing the VSM on the Hyper-V, then you can run it outside, and that's why it's showing an optional. And the thing shown in green here is the configuration of the VSM. Normally, if you are, if there's a separation between the server admin and admin and network admin, so this configuration part is the one which will be done by the network admin. And that is the only part where network admin will get involved, getting everything configured. And then network admin can hand off all the activity to server admin for the future configuration. And the next part is getting the Nexus 1000V logical switch. All these activities are done on SCVMM, where you get adding the switch extension manager that is establishing the connection to virtual supervisor module and creating logical switches and VM networks, everything. And these things are pretty self-explanatory, where you just prepare your Hyper-V host if you are configuring any VMQ settings for your physical adapters, which are different, you are using different vendors, all those things. For getting the Nexus 1000V logical switch on host, we have detailed different workflows, because when you are doing the management NIC and connecting it to Nexus 1000V, you have to do in certain order to make sure you retain the connectivity to management and all your host connectivity and virtual switches are working as expected. And the final step is to get the VMs connected to Nexus 1000V. So what we will do now is we'll switch to demo. So first part here will show that getting the SCVMM ready. So we install the provider on SCVMM that will get SCVMM configured. So it will allow you to connect to our virtual supervisor module. Once your provider is configured, you can register our VSM template. This is required if you are deploying your virtual supervisor module as a VM on the Hyper-V platform. It's a PowerShell script which is provided in the package. You will import the register your template. Next thing happens here is, let me pause and show. When you're adding a host to a logical switch, the forwarding extension needs to be installed on the host. And to get it installed, SCVMM provides a mechanism where you can have it available on SCVMM, and SCVMM will do the job of installing it on all the hosts which you are adding to Nexus 1000V. So it's nothing but just putting it in a certain location on SCVMM. And once that is done, you have to just have it VSM ISO ready if you are going to install a virtual supervisor module as a VM. So once everything is up, you can see it'll show up in the library. And now what we'll do is we'll install we'll install the virtual supervisor module as a VM. So template has all the right configuration already configured with the right settings for the RAM and the hard disk and everything. You'll just select the ISO and get the VM running. So once the VM is installed, this is the part where you'll do the basic configuration. And this is similar to, it's a Nexus OS, which is available also on our physical switches. So it's the same interface on physical and virtual world for the network supervisor model configuration. So here you'll just configure your IP address and the default to your network settings. And once that is done, network admin will have to connect to the configure IP address. And next thing you will do is have the configuration ready. So this one, based on your requirements, you'll have to configure what kind of subnet you want and what kind of VLAN you want to configure in the virtual for your virtual VMs. And this configuration, you will configure out on the virtual supervisor module. And once this is taken care, network admin's job is done, where this is up and running. So now moving to server admin. Once the connectivity is done, what server admin has to do is get the connection to virtual supervisor module. So we already have a script to do all these things. This is a PowerShell script which is shipped as a part of a product. It will allow you to connect to virtual supervisor module, get all the logical networks. It will also do creation of the logical switch and also creation of the VM networks which are required for the configuration along with the port classifications. So you can see here you have to just provide the IP address along with the credentials required for your VSM and the name of the switch you want to create as a logical switch on SCVMM. Based on your network configuration, it can take some time, but here it's a simple configuration. So it will pull all the data. As you can see, it will add as a network service. It will create a logical switch. On the logical switch, you can see it already enabled the right extension. That is a connection to your virtual supervisor model. It pulls all this uplink information, port classification, all this data from virtual supervisor module. Since it's imported from virtual supervisor model, you cannot edit logical network entities from here. You can also see it creates the VM networks. All this is created by the script. And once this is done, the next step is a configuration of the host. So on the host, you're going to go and deploy a logical switch instance. To do that, you'll go to virtual switches. You'll create a new virtual switch. Here you can select the uplink adapters and the uplink port profiles, what you want to assign. Here you can see both right now put in the same configuration. So these are all configuration will have, which is already pre-provisioned by network admin. So in this case, it will be port channel configuration, which is done on the Nexus 1000 VSH side, which supports all the different port channel modes. As you can see, when this is done, it already installs the MSI directly on the host. It creates the switch extension. It does all that configuration. It also has information to which virtual supervisor module to connect to. It will connect to that, and as you can see here, the actual Hyper-V host is connected to virtual supervisor module, and we can see this is a switch. As you can see here, this is a switch, and it's a line card here. And as you connect the ports to this particular line card, those will show up here. So you can see physical ports are showing up. So we show Ethernet ports, which are physical, and the virtual ports will show up as V8. It'll also show all the port channel information, what is being configured on every Ethernet port. So now you can see you have multiple modules already added to virtual supervisor module. You can see the port channel summary, which ports are part of which port channel. So if you have more than two adapters, you can have, we support 16 to 32 adapters where you can add those many to one particular physical server. Once that is done, the next part is just configuring your virtual machine to connect to Nexus 1000 vSwitch. Just go to, once all this physical fabric configuration is done, like creation of the logical network, VM networks, you just go to every VM, you connect to the network you want, and you apply the policy. So once all these ports are configured, you will be able to show all the ports on the virtual supervisor model where you can see which port is running on which particular host. And when the VM live migrates, we also monitor all that and we'll show up where the VM is. So we runtime monitor all the ports for all the virtual machines. You can see here, you can see all the statistics, MAC address, all the information regarding the virtual machine. And normally this will be done by the network admin will be interested in looking in all this configuration. For this particular VLAN, you can see what are the ports connected. So if you want to look into the physical side as well, you can see all that. And this will show that using Nexus 1000V, all the traffic is going through our forwarding extension. We can clear the counters, and as soon as there is more traffic, you can see the packet statistics and everything is getting updated. So this is a similar interface what you will see on the physical switches, which the Nexus OS is bringing to the virtual world. So to switching back to the presentation again, the next part we'll highlight is adding VXLAN and Hyper-V network virtualization support. This will be supported in our upcoming product. So to give you a overview, both are multi-tenant aware overlay technologies. VXLAN mostly focuses on the layer 2, which does the forwarding based on the MAC addresses, where Hyper-V network virtualization will do based on the layer 3, which will do IP address level routing. You can reuse the network, same network addresses when you are using both of these technologies. And Nexus 1000V is the first product right now which will be supporting both VXLAN and Hyper-V network virtualization on the Hyper-V platform. So just to, now we'll go over the quick demo of the VXLAN and HNV and what kind of configuration is required to get it up and running. As you can see here, all the configuration has to begin from virtual supervisor module. To get VXLAN and Hyper-V network virtualization going, you need the logical networks. And both of these logical networks, your subnet configuration, your VLAN configuration, has to be done on virtual supervisor module. So those logical networks will show up on SCVMM. So here is a simple configuration which you are applying on virtual supervisor module. First, we'll apply for VXLAN. Today, VXLAN is supported using the multicast IP group. So you can see here, multicast IP is getting configured. These are the basic configurations which are required for VXLAN to work. So once we apply the VXLAN, we'll apply the Hyper-V network virtualization settings, where you'll we'll configure all the PII IP address pool on our VSM. And once we configure all these things, we can configure our uplink profile so it can allow all these networks on the same physical links. So here you can see we are allowing VXLAN and Hyper-V network virtualization on the same uplink profile. This will be configured by network admin and can provide you the flexibility based on the needs, what kind of network should go on the same physical links or different physical links. So that can be done. And once this is applied on virtual supervisor module, this configuration is taken care. Now what will happen is you can see all the configuration is done, so we'll just print all the information. The next thing we'll do is we'll go to SCVMM. Here switches are already created, so you can see all the data is pulled from. This is the same configuration model which we saw earlier where we get all the data from virtual supervisor module. So that's how he's getting all the data. So you can see the data is already present, which we configured on our VSM. So the next part, once the logical network is present, is to create the VM networks. So VM networks, it's a creation of the VM network and VM subnet. So initially, first we'll create the Hyper-V network virtualization VM network. We'll select the right logical network. We'll isolate using the Hyper-V network virtualization. And we'll put one tenant on Hyper-V network virtualization and we'll put another on the VXLAN. So here you server admin can pick the subnet which is required for that particular tenant to onboard a tenant. We'll do the same thing for creation of VXLAN VM network. Here you'll see the difference where for Hyper-V network virtualization, the UI was different. Here it will show user defined, where user can define all the settings they want. We'll use the same IP range even for VXLAN when we are doing this. After we create both of this, we can create IP pool on both of them. So you can change the settings. So server admin is free to do all the setting changes for IP address pools. This is the same configuration if you are doing Hyper-V network virtualization directly on SCVMM. We'll do the create the IP pool for VXLAN as well. Once these both VM networks are created, we will take a look at what it shows up on our virtual supervisor module. Both of these networks are push this information is pushed to our virtual supervisor module, and you can see the network segments are created on our side. And on virtual supervisor model, we also create a, something called bridge domain. That's our broadcast domain. And you can see two different domains are created, one for Hyper-V network virtualization and one for VXLAN. Now we'll put on the host. For VXLAN to get up and running, we need the virtual endpoint on the host. So for that, we create virtual host adapter, which will be reachable for, which will be doing actual encapsulation of VXLAN traffic. That will be the endpoint for the VXLAN. It's a, for HNV, it gets done internally from the Hyper-V host, all the encapsulation. So here we are doing the coexistence. So for VXLAN traffic, it is getting encapsulated from Nexus 1000V, while Hyper-V network virtualization, we are running in a coexistence mode with Microsoft Virtual Switch. So actual encapsulation is done by Microsoft forwarding engine for only for Hyper-V network virtualization. So you can see these interfaces for VXLAN are showing up for both hosts. For VXLAN, since we do multicast base, you can check all the configuration from VSM, which shows up what is all the ports are showing up in the join to that particular multicast IGMP querier, and it joins the multicast group. Now what we will do is we'll put VMs on two different networks, two VMs in Hyper-V network virtualization and two VMs in VXLAN network. And after this configuration, we can see how the traffic flows through Nexus 1000V and watch everything is functional and all the traffic can go through. So we'll configure multiple VMs. So here, all the VM deployment time, you will see all these options for VM network and port classifications. So for VM network, when you had user can deploy more VM networks if they want to in the same VXLAN or same HNV logical network. Since it's separated by the, either it's a VXLAN ID or Hyper-V network virtualization ID, the same logical network and physical network configuration like VLANs can be reused when this configuration is done. So right now we are deploying four VMs, two for tenant one and two for tenant two. So once these are deployed, we'll power all of them on. We can see here, if you see the VM properties, the right configuration is applied. The tenant one is the name we gave to VM subnet while during the creation. And you can also see here for both the tenants, one VM is running on host one and one is running on host two. So that way we'll make sure the traffic is flowing across host for both the technologies. So now we'll power on all the hosts, all the virtual machines, and we will demonstrate the traffic between the virtual machines. So we have all four VMs running across hosts. So first we'll ping for tenant one. And then we'll go to tenant two, which is also using the same IP subnet. Now if you look into the virtual supervisor module, you can see all these ports are showing up. All these ports are connected to Nexus 1000V switch, as you can see here. When they're connected to non-VLAN traffic, you can see the VLAN is marked as not valid. And then it will show, when we do the show bridge domain, we see two VMs are showing up in the HNV network, and two VMs are showing in the VXLAN network. We can also see all the port channel information because the actual physical links being used. And what we are showing here is, right now we are using the single interface on that particular host. You can see there is only one physical interface, but in the network monitor, you will see both the traffic. So you can see 20.20.20 is a provider address for a Hyper-V network virtualization, which is shown up all the in the policy configuration in the Hyper-V host. If you do the standard PowerShell commandlets for Hyper-V network virtualization, you can see that is the IP being used. And you can see the protocol as a GRE as well. And 192 is being used for VXLAN traffic, which you can see is using the VXLAN protocol, which is shown as 4789. So this demonstrates that both traffic can flow through same virtual switch and the same physical uplink. We'll quickly go over our other product offerings as well. With the Nexus 1000V, what we integrate is with virtual security gateway. It provides a virtual firewall to integration with all the VMs and providing the virtual security for all these particular VMs. It is a integrated solution with Nexus 1000V. So it's called VPath. It integrates all the flow capability with the VSG virtual firewall. It creates all the flow. It provides all the different secure segmentation. You can see it supports high availability and it provides all the dynamic policy provisioning. It integrates with SCVMM, so it can query all the information from SCVMM. And as you can see, when the VM moves, all the policies are moved when the virtual security gateway is applied. So to do all these things, so VSG has integration with Cisco's PNSC, that's Cisco's Prime Network Services Controller, which integrates with SCVMM and allows the VM attributes and the configuration based on the different VM parameters, which can be configured and applied on the any VM workloads and create different secure zones on the virtual security gateway. So this is a VSG workflow. It's a different workflow to get. Once a Nexus 1000V is running, there is a few additional things has to be done to get the VSG up. It's to get the VSG running and then the PNSC running, and you have to integrate with SCVMM. So that can be. It's already documented. So I'll hand back to Bob. So that's the session.
That was great. Let's have a round of applause for all these demos. Good stuff.
Definitely stop by our booth if you have any additional information needed or if you have any additional questions right now, feel free to ask them.
Okay, so I'm supposed to ask you to make sure that you fill out an evaluation. So please do so. And again, thank you very much to our three presenters. For some great partner demos. Thank you.